It's Jonathan Wilson here for CKUW, and right now I'm interviewing David Ball. He's a reporter slash photographer working for the Vancouver Observer and Rabble.ca, and also published many other places as a freelance writer. So recently he's published an article in the Vancouver Observer about the inquiry into the missing women, which is kind of come out of complaints people have had over the handling of Robert Picton, the murder case on his pig farm. Now, specifically, he spoke with a man named Bill Hiscox, who spent some time working for Picton. Now, I guess, could you first explain sort of what this inquiry and how it came about? Because a lot of people may think, oh, you know, this case is closed. He was charged with these murders, and there's nothing else to know about it. But why has this become a controversial case?
Well, the inquiry, officially known as the Missing Women's Commission of Inquiry, started last October, it came about after decade of or more of demands that the police be investigated for severely botching up the Picton investigation. And the government had basically stalled on actually doing an investigation or inquiry into this, although each of the police forces involved, the Vancouver Police and the RCMP, had done their own internal reports, basically looking at why he wasn't caught earlier. The fact was that women working in the sex industry in the downtown east side of Vancouver, who are predominantly First Nations women, very, very poor, many of them drug addicted, very vulnerable people, had been warning each other of Picton or of a pig farmer in Coquitlam. He was on bad date sheets. He was in sex worker drop-in centers. His picture was up saying, don't go with him. Women that he was using to recruit other workers to go to his farm, many of whom died there, they were booted out of these centers. So it's not like people didn't know him. Mm-hmm. In fact, people went in with very credible tips, very close to Picton, that he was the one causing women to go missing in, as early as 1998, possibly even earlier. So the police never acted on those tips and decided that it wasn't a priority case, essentially. And so now what we're saying is, now that Picton is in jail, keep in mind, he admitted in jail that he killed 49 women, and they found DNA for about that many on his farm of people, but half of the DNA was for men, in fact, not women. So he had about 30 charges against him. I'm not sure exactly how many. They were dropped down to 6 second-degree murder convictions.
Right.
So although he's in jail forever, there's a lot of questions about, A, why they didn't catch him earlier, B, why they didn't take the women's deaths and disappearances seriously, and C, why there's a number of irregularities in his trial process, why they decided to drop 20 charges that were clear-cut evidence with women's DNA and blood on the farm and body parts, and also why they didn't pursue some other angles, such as, was he acting alone? Why wasn't his brother in the trial, a well-known Hells Angels member who lived on the farm at the time? So there's a lot of questions like that that have come up. And even at this inquiry, those questions are being suppressed.
So so this inquiry has come up to answer these questions, and yet they're still, how are they being suppressed?
Well, right from the beginning, the inquiry has been controversial. Everyone was happy when it was announced, but then immediately there was problems. The first was that the commissioner set up to head the inquiry, Wally Opal, was the Attorney General of British Columbia and a BC Liberal member of the legislature, who was the one who stayed the 20 charges in the first place, under his command at least. Mm-hmm. So he was involved in the trial. He is not impartial. The second was that the provincial government refused requests from community groups in the downtown east side and First Nation groups for legal representation. They would not provide any funding for them, even though I've been in the inquiry. There are dozens of lawyers for the police in there, different levels of policing, the Vancouver Police, the RCMP, Ministry of Justice, the Commission has lawyers. Each officer being questioned on the stand has brought lawyers in. The former police chief testified a couple weeks ago. He actually resigned in the aftermath of the Picton investigation, and as a result of the protests, in fact. And he brought in one of Canada's most high-powered lawyers from Toronto. So they're spending a huge fortune on defending the police and can't even fund a few lawyers for groups like the Downtown Eastside Women's Center, or for sex worker organizations, or for the Assembly First Nations. So all of those groups were effectively pushed out and are boycotting the proceedings. So that's right off the start, major issues with an inquiry that the whole point of it is to settle the questions of what happened and what went wrong. Then, over the last couple months, lawyers, the three lawyers who remain for the community interest, two of them represent families of missing women. One represents Downtown Eastside Vancouver interests, and then there's a fourth one who represents Aboriginal interests.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, every time that one of those lawyers has suggested that there may be some kind of a cover-up, that there might be gang connections in this case with the Hells Angels, that there was any systemic problems of racism, the commission has, in so many cases, interrupted and overruled them and shut the questions down. The most recent was about a month ago. One of the lawyers for the family suggested that there may, in fact, be a police cover-up in this case, and another lawyer suggested that the Hells Angels be investigated in terms of their connection to the case. Both of those lawyers were overruled by Commissioner Wally Ogle. That raises some questions. Why can't you talk about the Hells Angels or a potential police cover-up here? Basically, it sounds like he has predetermined his report, which is that the police made some mistakes. And what the lawyers for the families are arguing is that it went beyond mistakes. It went to an actual systemic problem in the police force and even potential corruption.
What kind of mistakes are they admitting that they're making? Like, what is being allowed as an official line here?
Well, the Vancouver Police Department has been most vocal in admitting its mistakes and apologizing. The RCMP refused to apologize until about a month ago. So the Vancouver Police's position was that they failed to take the missing women report seriously, that there was major staffing problems, personnel problems in the missing women's department, including a really rude secretary who made racist comments to families who called in and suggested that the girls were just drug addicts and were out partying and didn't file the reports, to officers who were not only sexually harassing other police officers in the force, but were unbearable to their own eight units members and couldn't communicate. The other problem that's been admitted is that the police forces couldn't communicate, that the RCMP and Vancouver Police Department, although they had a joint operation to investigate this, at first there was a lot of conflicting jurisdiction issues where the women were picked up in one place, potentially taken somewhere else. I mean, it's very convoluted, but essentially they're saying, yes, there were problems. We didn't take the concern seriously. There was, you know, we didn't communicate with the sex working community in Vancouver adequately, even to the point of admitting that there was, you know, some bias in their attitudes towards mostly Aboriginal poor sex working drug addicted women. That said, that's about as far as it goes, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty far in terms of a police department admitting its mistakes, but it, of course, is also them covering their asses, sorry to excuse the expression, for a future lawsuit, because it's almost undeniable that they ignored these families when they reported their loved ones missing back in the 90s.
Now, you mentioned people were questioning whether Picton was acting alone, and it would seem, you know, if his brother's in the Hells Angels and you're disposing of bodies in a pig farm, it's almost like a cliche mafia movie as how they would dispose of people and get rid of them. So, I mean, for this one guy to be disposing of, you said there was male and female female bodies, like why is he killing these people is kind of the question.
And did he?
Yeah. And is he killing them or is he just disposing of them or owning it? And so that's definitely like a, you know, just, it seems like a glaring thing that would really be something the police should investigate, and instead of just trying to, I guess, make excuses for you know, why, like, I guess the big thing that people were saying is that they had been warning the police about this farm, and like you said, all the people in the sex trade knew about him, and then you in your article you interviewed this Bill Hiscox, who said he worked for Picton, and that he offered to be an informant. Could you speak about him specifically and what he told you?
He is a fascinating character. I just felt really honored to get to spend time with him and to gain his trust as a source. He's been interviewed before by some media outlets, but I haven't seen much of his actual experience of the farm as well as his experience with the police. And when I met him, I really said, you know, they're not letting you testify in the inquiry. He seems like an obvious person, and here's why. He worked for Picton in 1998. Mm-hmm. They were tearing down an old motel. Kind of, they do salvage work. And he started getting a really bad feeling on the farm. His stepsister, Lisa Yelds, was Picton's best friend, and she started telling him that she was finding First Nation status cards of at least 10 women in his trailer when she was in there. He saw piles of women's clothing outside the trailer, and she said there was piles of clothing inside as well, and some of them had what looked like blood on them. Also, he'd overheard Picton talking about injecting women with windshield fluid or potentially even feeding them to pigs. So he went to the police after he saw a poster for one missing woman, Sarah DeVries, back in 1998. The police were very interested in the case. One detective, Lori Shanner, in fact, met with him repeatedly. And then a few months later, it was just dropped, and he didn't understand why. In fact, when he continued to call back, he alleges that the RCMP phoned him and said, if you phone Detective Shanner again, we are going to charge you with harassment. And he said, all I want to do is get this guy off the street. I know he's the one who's killing these women. That was 4 full years before he was arrested by the police. And I might point out, if people don't remember, that when he was arrested, he wasn't even arrested for this investigation. They'd never got a search warrant for his property. They'd never searched it. He'd even invited them to search it back in the 90s, late 90s. And they didn't call his bluff. They didn't bother to search it. He's, oh, come search it if you want. Nothing to hide. And they never went on. A rookie officer was looking for an informant in some drug case. The guy says, well, I can't give you any drug dealers, but I know a guy who's got some illegal weapons, handguns and rifles and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So the guy just filled out a warrant, searched the property, and as soon as he got in the trailer, he saw all the IDs and the not only the guns, but that was the basis. It wasn't even the missing women's unit or the Project Even-Handed that was set up to investigate the missing women that got him in the end. It was a rookie cop looking for some guns. And that's a pretty embarrassing thing for the police department that even they recognize is something's not right there. But Bill Hiscox was on the farm. He remembers Picton quite vividly. He's got some very disturbing imagery of how it felt to be on the farm. But he just had a gut feeling that something was not right. And when he talked to his sister-in-law, she had the same feeling, and they decided to go to the police. He wanted them to put a wire on him and send him in. Mm-hmm. To try to get Picton for something. I mean, Picton was known to boast about how he could help other people dispose of bodies in the farm, how he could kill women by injecting them with windshield wiper fluid. There's at least 3 or 4 witnesses who have said he told him these things. One guy, he even showed him how he killed the women. So it wasn't like he was very secretive. Anyways, Bill Hiscox is now in Alberta, but he came down to be at the inquiry and to meet with some of the families of the missing women. And he just doesn't understand why they didn't use him as an informant, why they dropped the ball and stopped communicating with him. In fact, why they threatened to charge him with harassment when he phoned this police officer.
One of the only people who's come out like this, but or has there been a lot of people who say had similar experiences where they knew about something about Picton and his bragging and they tried to tell police?
He was one of the few who went forward. There were a few others. I can't bring them to mind exactly right now. One of the most prominent witnesses in his trial back in 2007 was Lynn Ellingson. She had actually been with him picked up a sex worker downtown and brought her back to the farm. He got her high on drugs and she passed out, and when she woke up, she saw a light on in the barn, and she went out there and saw Picton skinning her alive on the hanging from a pig hook.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said, if you tell anyone, I'm going to do this to you as well. And then she left the farm, and he apparently complained to other people that that she was costing a lot of money because she was blackmailing him over this. And he asked a couple people if they would, if they could take her out, if they could kill her. So she testified at the trial about this, but the police didn't consider her, some of the police didn't consider her a credible witness. The detectives who interviewed her did, but basically when it came down to it, the police department as a whole didn't regard her testimony about seeing these women, seeing this woman being killed as a credible thing because she was drug addicted.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, putting this all together, like, is this police incompetence, or is there some pattern of suppression, like, of getting, you know, getting this case out? Like, the fact that it was discovered by chance on a completely unrelated charge, even though people had been bringing it up, you know, specifically about the missing women and his farm, and they had refused to follow up. Why would the police not want to investigate murders?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question that a true public inquiry should answer, and mm-hmm. they should not be shutting down questions to that regard. That seems, in fact, to even reject Bill Hiscox from a witness list seems pretty pretty glaring mistake on their part. The other piece that I think is important to recognize is that it wasn't just that Picton's brother, Dave, who lived on the farm with him, was a member of the Hell Angels. It's that the farm ran a nightclub. A Hell's Angels nightclub called Piggy's Palace on their property. They had a Hell's Angels safe house across the street that was widely known. There was a constant stream of Hell's Angels hanging out on the farm. Everyone knew it. Several police officers partied at Piggy's Palace, that's proven, and knew the Pictons. They were well known in the community. And also that the Picton had boasted that he'd helped people get rid of bodies there. And in fact, for the 90s, the police actually charged him with, in the early 90s or late 80s, they charged him and his brother with actually burying fraudulent car they were doing an insurance fraud with the Hells Angels where they were burying car parts and cars that they were claiming for insurance fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And the police were actually investigating that. So he clearly could get rid of and bury anything illegal on his farm. They found male DNA there. There's heavy ties to the Hells Angels, who were running many of the hotels that these sex workers were living in and being picked up from by Picton. I'm not saying that there's necessarily a connection or that Picton didn't do all these things, but you think it would be worth investigating.
Mm-hmm.
And at least not silencing the lawyers if they suggest that there might be a gang connection here or that there might be corruption with the police. It's not unheard of that police would have corrupt relations with the Hells Angels. It's happened all over, especially right now we're looking in Montreal and in parts of Quebec where the construction industry is heavily controlled by Hells Angels and the police have ties. In other cities, police have ties to organized crime. We don't know about Vancouver, but it certainly is a question worth asking for a public inquiry of this nature.
And but putting up, you know, the inquiry like this is the way to, you know, I guess, attempt to silence these criticisms?
I don't know. That's a question.
Yeah, exactly.
What is the point of the public inquiry? A lot of people are criticizing it. They've switched to a new format to hear more voices from the community because it became undeniable that people were upset and outraged.
Mm-hmm.
But switching to a panel of, you know, local residents doesn't get to the bottom of what happened behind the scenes in policing. Why did they not follow up on some very obvious things? I think allegations of a cover-up actually seem quite credible when you put all the pieces together like this. And the most troubling question of all is that, I mean, Vancouver has hundreds of missing women's cases, and they are among 600 across Canada at minimum of mostly First Nations Indigenous women who have gone missing, and now the United Nations is investigating Canada for this. It's a lot bigger than most Canadians realize it is, and this is actually part of a much bigger picture, a much bigger puzzle that shouldn't be just brushed off by overruling questions that might get to the heart of why there's so many complaints about police violence, police neglect, police abuses of power towards Indigenous people, First Nations, and sex workers. I think these questions, if the inquiry doesn't answer them, then someone is going to have to answer for them. There has to be accountability for what's going on.
All right. Thanks, David, so much for doing this interview. And
thank you very much.
And keep up the good work, okay?